Thank you for joining me for episode 25 of The Mark of a Druid. I do suggest you start the story at the beginning. And if you want more information about me, the author, Rhonda R. Carpenter, please, by all means, go to themarkofadruid.com. Now on to our story. Chapter 37, The Lion Meets the Wolf. Ryerson muddled through another series of meetings. For two solid days, the chief financial officer and VPs from every department imaginable had surrounded him. Breakfast meetings, followed with working lunches and dinners designed to impress himself and Craig, felt unending. Ian Fitzsimmons, the founder of the firm, was the one person that pulled Ryerson out of his dazed overload. Business, however, was not the topic of Ryerson's thoughts. He simply felt he knew the man, even from across the room. The near 7-foot-tall Fitzsimmons, clad in a black Armani jacket and jeans, reeked of savvy businessman. His short, cinnamon-colored hair was white at the temples, accenting intense emerald eyes. Ian was forceful, with a commanding presence that filled the conference room. Ryerson followed his movements from handshake to handshake. As he made his way around the room, smiling, he reached Craig's side. He greeted him with a firm, two-handed shake. "Hello, I'm pleased to have the time to meet with you, Craig Bellamy, Ian Fitzsimmons." Craig's wide grin matched Ian's. "That would mean you're Ryerson Sanders. The pleasure is all mine." Mesmerized, Ryerson looked him up and down. A memory flashed. Recognition teetered on the edge of Ryerson's consciousness and was then gone. "Yes, Mr. Fitzsimmons," Ryerson said as he tore his stare away from the intense emerald eyes. "Call me Ian, please." Fitzsimmons wore a ring on his right pinky finger that snagged Ryerson's attention. Intricate lines formed knots around a wide gold band. The substantial mounting held a jet-black stone. Three gold and white lions struck out at a sinister blackness from the center of their place upon the blood-red crest. Their golden heads and front claws held in a poise ready to attack, while pure white hind legs and curled tails, each one different, blended into a crimson shield. Absent-mindedly, Ian used his thumb to straighten the set of the well-worn ring on his finger. Ian didn't notice the interest Ryerson had paid to his ring while he was speaking with Craig. "Shall we take our seats?" Ian's voice was a deep baritone with a lilt which made it almost musical. "Of course, let's get started," Ryerson insisted a bit more strongly than he intended. "If you don't mind, I'd like to forego protocol and sit across from both of you. I prefer to look a man in the eye while we're negotiating. That is, if the other vultures don't mind." He inclined his head toward the table and gave a short, soft laugh. He walked to the opposite side of the table, pulled out the chair, and seated himself alongside R.J. Rolfings, who had facilitated the offer between the two companies. Ian shook his hand and thumped him on the shoulder. The 10 other men at the table were comprised of 4 lawyers, 2 from each side of the company, and 2 that Ryerson Partners had retained, 4 VPs, and the chief financial officer, who was seated next to Lyle Zeller, the production manager. A young woman laid a prospectus in front of each of them and discreetly exited the room. RJ was the first to open the document and quickly thumbed through the pages. He gave a nod of approval. He simply held his sights on Ryerson and Craig as they read along while the CFO laid out the terms with a quick summary. $4.4 million to Ryerson Partners, a company condominium for open-ended use in Los Angeles, and Craig works hand-in-hand with manufacturing for no less than 1 year. Ryerson would be free to continue development from wherever he liked. Fitzsimmons never opened his copy of the prospectus. "Let's face it, gentlemen, your software will revolutionize the internet. Ryerson Partners can't meet their current demand. Marketing is another challenging area. We're willing to buy the product patent. You'll maintain a 25% share of the profits and controlling interest in all future upgrades. So what say you? Craig flipped the cover closed and looked up with a confident smirk on his face. Ryerson scanned the last few pages. A wise man had once told him, "Too soon to accept, and you make yourself easy prey for the next offer." When he did close his copy, he held Ian's gaze without blinking. 24 hours. "We'd like that long to have our people," he nodded his head at the lawyers, "look over the fine points." "Fair enough." "I'd say so," Ian replied, a bit of a tangled frown on his face. "One day it is, then. We'll see you here tomorrow." The meeting adjourned with niceties and invitations to supper, and while Craig accepted, Ryerson had other plans and excused himself. Eve McCormick was next on his to-do list. He glanced at his watch as the elevator descended to the parking garage. The appointment was still 2 hours off. Not only did his dreams invade his waking thoughts, but that ring of Ian's was spiraling in his mind. Where on earth could he have seen it before? Ryerson was nervous and hopeful when he pulled up to the parking attendant's booth. He was directed to park in the underground lot. The temperature dropped to a dim coolness. It was soothing. He glanced at his watch for the fourth time in 2 minutes. Still an hour and a half to go. He leaned the seat back and rested his spinning mind. Adam stood on the shore of the Shannon River as a warm wind dislodged stray ebony hairs from the leather thong at the base of his neck. "The Audrey arrives this eve. Are you prepared?" Arthviel arched a bushy gray brow toward Adam. He held a gnarled staff in one hand, impatiently tapping it on the ground. "Adam!" he shouted. Adam's back stiffened. "I am." His voice was detached. He lifted his nose to the air. "Young fool, you act as if this great meeting is simply a gathering of friends." "Shh." The hairs at the base of Adam's neck rose in warning. He spun on his heel. Amber eyes scanned the landscape. "A party approaches," he stated flatly, lifting his nose to the breeze. "Two women, I would say high-ranking from the scent of them. And 4 men. Soldiers, I think. I can hear the sound of metal tapping metal." Adam widened his stance while a tattooed hand rested casually on his sword hilt. "I hear nothing." Arthviel inclined his head eastward. "No, they come from the south." He pointed to a hillock crowned with a stand of oak. The party cleared the trees at a canter moments later. Arthviel squinted, making out only undefinable shapes. But there were 6 in the party, each astride a horse. Adam had not been comfortable around horses once his training was completed. They sensed the wolf in him, or perhaps the lingering of the wolf's spirit. It was best, he knew, to draw back from the animals so as not to throw any of the riders. Even though he did just that, the horses pranced wildly back from him. Nostrils flared and eyes rolled white as they tossed their heads. Adam stepped back even further. The armed men assisted 2 women from their mounts. 2 of the soldiers took the horses away. Adam felt like a delegation had descended upon him. And in short order, he was about to be put to the test. The younger of the 2 wore a full-length traveling cloak of emerald green, worked at its edges with small golden flowers and bees, symbolizing the dance of life. He regarded her with a tilt of his smoothly shaven face. When he turned his attention to the other woman, his mouth hung open. It was Dubjila of the Standing Stones, but how could this be possible? She was in Wales with the Great One. He almost shook his head to clear her face from his mind. The eldest of the females took Arthfiel's hands in hers and clasped them tightly. "Brosna of the Standing Stone recognizes you, Arthfiel. High Druid of the Raven's Wing, counselor to the warrior clan. And I recognize you, Brosna of the Standing Stones." The old druid turned his attention to the young woman. He clasped her hands firmly, almost reverently, as he bowed in a formal submission to her authority. "Please, Arthfiel, let us see each other as friends." The stunning heart-shaped face turned to Adam. Arthur Viel hurried on with formal introductions to Emir, provincial queen of Duvland. Daughter of the Ardri, may I present Adam of the Amber Eyes. Adam bent at the waist, clasped both her hands in his, and released them with gravity. The two remaining soldiers fell back from the women, with a wave from Brosna's hand. Now, Adam, she paused, her sky-blue eyes probing him in a way that made his hackles go up. I see, from the look in your eye, you've met my sister. No? He shook his head without thinking. It was as if she could see his inner self, maybe even parts of him he had not yet discovered. He shifted his footing as a hard rock of insecurity formed in his belly. I recognize you, Brosna of the Standing Stones, he said. And I you, Adam of the Ember Eyes. Shall we be gracious hosts? Said Arthviel. Yes, this way. Adam extended his arm to Emir. She took it, and spoke of the ride while they walked to the tent that had been erected some 50 feet to the east. There's clean water here, Adam said. A wooden basin was set before each woman, and they washed the dirt from their hands and faces. Carmag cleared his throat at the tent flap. Barrel-chested, he waited for acknowledgement, his thick arms held rigidly at his sides. Adam smiled at his friend, but before he could greet him, Arthviel cut him off. Carmag of the Sword, will you attend to the lady's companions? See they are shown every hospitality. A swift nod of the head and a stiff bow sent Carmag on his way. Brosna and Emir spoke of the Ardri in terms of secrecy. Emir spoke plainly. He prefers to meet with you alone, and my father wants you to appear to him in your animal form. He wishes to see it for himself. I shall do as he asks. Where am I to meet him? The stone-like feeling was back in the pit of his stomach. There is a spring that feeds the Shannon at the foot of the hills to the east. Meet him at the large rock outcropping. You'll not be able to miss it. When? Adam asked. He awaits your arrival now. Her face was lovely, and there was a comforting lift to her brow and dimples in her cheeks when she smiled. He said to tell you that if you are the Great One's partner, then you'll be safe enough. I see. Adam ground his teeth. Everyone wanted proof that he was a changeling. He wondered if the entire island would see him naked before this was finished. Then I shall be on my way, he stated. We shall await your return, Adam of the Amber Eyes. All will be well. The gods have chosen. Hard-faced, Brosna stood, and Emir and Arthviel followed suit. Adam approached the stream with a sense of trepidation. Black fur prickled his pores. He watched from the trees before he approached the King of Erin. Even in his advanced years, Brian Boru was an impressive figure of powerful control. Sinew and bone held him half a head taller than Adam, and Adam was taller than most. The Audrey's hair was plaited in what Adam thought was the traditional style of the Dalcassian's clan. The man moved with a grace and certainty that demanded attention. He was the first to bring peace to the people of his island. Adam should have been excited to be summoned by such a man, but all he felt was that he, himself, was not sure he was the Great One's partner. What if Arthviel had tattooed incorrectly? What if there had been some sort of mistake? And then Alion's face flashed in his memory. He was completely certain he loved her, even though he'd not spoken to her. What if she would not have him as a partner? He tore his eyes from the king, then lumbered forward to have this done with, to pass this man's test, or die. If he did die, then he would return again to be with her, no matter what the cost. A horn honked, and Ryerson jerked upright in the semi-darkness of the underground parking area. He scrubbed at his face with dry hands and checked the time on his wristwatch. Still 15 minutes until the appointment. He exited the car and rode the elevator to the 5th floor. A knot formed in his stomach, and he uttered a plea for help. Please let it be the one that's supposed to help me. Please, God, let it be the one. Chapter 38. The Veil. Green, green, as far as the eye could see. The unending lushness of this place was all-consuming. The rolling hills called to Alion. She had to go to them. There was no other choice. The thrum of the earth rose from the soles of her feet and rang in unison with each beat of her heart. No land had ever called to her in this way before. Alion placed one foot after the other. Toward what? She wasn't sure. Forests came and went, outcroppings of rock and root, carved stairways that led to vistas, the magnitude of which stole her breath and left her slack-jawed. And still she walked. Each footfall took her closer, but to what she could not be sure. Alion embraced a primal need to seek out this land. To deny it would mean she could never know her true self. Alion wanted, before all else, to know who and what she was. From the top of a craggy precipice, a great river wound itself through the hills. It glittered as rays of light danced on its surface. The sky was so clear. It could only have been the gods themselves that had sucked the gray mist from it, just so they could marvel at that which they created. Alion held her hands to the sky, letting the sun shine down around her. She let it penetrate her skin. The warmth of its rays seemed like fingers. She let it knead the muscles and nerves of her body until it seeped into the very marrow of her bones. Alion sank to the ground, wishing she could melt into the landscape. Closing her eyes, she inhaled deeply. This was the time to ask. This was the time to seek out the world beyond the veil. She needed answers. What was it she was supposed to do now? Alion allowed her body to rest, and she cleared her mind. She was alone. No one had followed her. No one had come after her. That barbaric amber-eyed heathen had not pursued her. A part of her was thankful, but a much bigger part of her inner voice screamed at her. He was hers. She shook her head, trying to vanquish his eyes, those amber eyes. Now was the time to ask her questions. Enough of this foolishness about a rock-headed, sheep-brained man. She cleared her throat and spoke to the gods. Bron Bridge Alwen, your help I do require. Your protection I invoke. Your wisdom and guidance I do seek. Bron Bridge Owen, your help I do require. Your protection I invoke. Your wisdom and guidance I do seek. Bron Bridge Owen, your strength I require. Your essence my own. Your cunning flows around me. Bron Bridge Alwen, my thanks I do render, my gratitude eternally unending, my respect forever yours. The veil is thin. Part the way, part the way, part the way. Alion sensed, before she saw her spirit rise, a thin cord of silver light remained attached to her navel, but her spirit was free. She faced the veil and glided through the shimmering curtain of light. There was no longer ground beneath her or sky above her. There was neither up nor down. In the distance, she saw only a pulsating glow. An unseen wind crept over her. It lifted her further from her body, drawing her deeper into the other world of spirit. She knew her mothers had to be here. She called to them both, not knowing which would come. Mother, Arok, Gretich, I need you. In that moment, she reconciled herself to the truth they had told her. A fine wisp of crimson light appeared to her right. From within that light, Gretich materialized, stretching her arms out to Alion. Mother, tell me what to do. Tell me where to go. Alion, my beautiful child, go to your father. Know him, for his time is short. She smiled, her eyes gleaming and sparkling, and Alion felt safe in her arms. I don't know where he is. Follow the Shannon north, child. One will come to lead you. You will find him. Now you must go. I will be here if you need me. She released her grasp, and then spoke again with a broad smile. Alion. Yes, mother. Trust the wolf. Now go. The tug she felt from the silver thread was so strong Alion feared it might break. With a sudden shudder, she felt the ground beneath her, hard and firm. She waited a long moment, allowing her spirit to settle back into its casing before opening her eyes. She felt dizzy and weak. Then Alion realized there was something cold and wet pressed against her hand. She dare not open her eyes. She could feel the hot, moist air from its breath on the back of her hand. Whatever it was alive and too close for comfort. Her head pounded, leaving Alion's mind abuzz with questions. What was breathing on her? The only way to find out was to open her eyes, but they refused to cooperate. Whatever it was, it sniffed at her hand. When she tried to pull back, a slow vibration was followed by a low-pitched whimper, which faded into a long whine. She flinched and pulled away instinctively, her eyes fluttering open. A longing filled her, but she pushed it away at the sight of the wolf. He was crouched, low to the ground, his big black head resting between his paws. She shuffled back and scurried away from it, but it made no move except to blink its large yellow eyes. Her mother's words rang in her mind. Trust the wolf. She stopped. Is this the wolf I'm to trust? It must be. But still, a wolf, of all the things to place your trust in, a creature so unpredictable. Where there is one, there is another. They are pack animals. Am I to trust them all? Are there others? She scanned the field and the forest's edge, but saw no movement save the birds swooping from one branch to the next. Long grasses swayed in a soft breeze. Her gaze returned to the wolf. She tilted her head to one side. The wolf mimicked her. Cautiously, Alion stood, brushing the leaves and dirt from her skirt. The wolf rose and shook its black fur, dislodging debris from its coat. Is it doing that on purpose? The animal pawed at the ground and spun in a circle. It seemed excited, not threatening. She was astounded and confused. The wolf backed away, giving a short, huffing bark. What? What do you want? She did not know why she spoke to it, but it tilted its head and seemed to understand. It approached her with some trepidation, and she stepped back. It stopped and barked again. But this time it was throaty and drawn out, as if it were attempting to speak. She had no clue what the beast wanted. The wolf was the largest she'd ever seen. Black fur glistened in the midday light, and his yellow eyes flashed while it lowered its bulk to the ground and crawled to the hem of her skirt. This was almost more than she could stand. What in the gods' names was she supposed to do with a wolf? It tugged at the hem of her skirt. She pulled the fabric back. Again it tugged at the hem of her skirt, but this time did not allow her to have it back when she pulled. Give me my skirt, you dirty beast! He did not relent. He was now pulling so hard she had to walk toward him so the fabric would not rip. You're going to damage it, she said through clenched teeth. The beast released the hem, and she toppled backward, landing hard on her rump. Ugh. Why, you! Go away! Get! Right now! I think I'd rather be fighting off that amber-eyed devil. Be gone! To her surprise, it loped off into the trees and was quickly out of sight. Trust the wolf, indeed. When Eve opened her eyes, she knew it was going to be a bad night. After recording her experience, she drew a sketch of the wolf. It was the animal's eyes which bothered her. They were alive, so unlike a drawing, and yet she knew it had come from her own hand. She stared at them. Those eyes reminded her of the dark-haired captor that had taken Alian from her home. A shiver ran down her body, and she slammed the leather cover on the journal closed. She needed to be in the office early. She patted makeup over her face, mostly covering the yellowish bruise under her eye. After making sure the jacket and skirt concealed the remainder of her injuries, she dashed out the door to the clinic. I'd like to say thank you to all my listeners. Please come back and see me again next week if you have questions about The Mark of a Druid, or you'd like to know more about me, the author. Please go to my websites at themarkofadruid.com or rondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.